On Thursday, the 15th of May, The Spectator is hosting a live book club event. Sam Leith will be joined by former Telegraph editor-in-chief and military historian Max Hastings. It will be an opportunity to talk about Max's new book, Sword, D-Day, Trial by Battle, as well as mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day. The full details are as follows. 7:30 on Thursday the 15th of May at the Shaw Theatre in Euston, London, and tickets start from £27.50, although I believe there are ticket options that include a signed copy of the book. For those tickets, go to www.spectator.co.uk/bookslive. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm Lucy Dunn and today I'm joined by James Heal and Isabel Hardman. We've just watched Prime Minister's Questions, where Keir Starmer was quizzed on everything from unemployment to immigration to the war in Gaza. But first, it was Leader of the Opposition, Kemi Badenoch, who was up. Isabel, Kemi's been criticised in the past on her performance at PMQs. How do you think she got on today?
I think she did better, or at least it was a harder session for the Prime Minister, because she now has data that she can wave at him saying, look, your economic plan is not working. You know, unemployment figures, which she really hammered him on in terms of the Chancellor's jobs tax. And she returned to a point that I think is really worth her continuing to make about the impact of the National Insurance contributions rise on hospices. And she also was ready for the Prime Minister's answer on that, which was that he basically talked about some capital funding for, I think it's just children's hospices, and Badenoch basically pounced on him as a result of that and pointed out that you know they'd been through this before. He was talking about a different funding pot. This is about revenue spending, and the hospices are having to find £250,000 extra to cover this tax rise. So I thought that Badenoch did much better. I also thought that Starmer was struggling. Is that because Badenoch is getting better at PMQs, or is it because the news is getting worse for Keir Starmer? I'm not sure whether you can fully credit the Conservative leader. I thought it was interesting. There were two other things that I thought were really interesting in what Starmer wanted to talk about. He obviously wanted to talk about the trade deals again, but he also wanted to keep declaring that the Conservatives are a finished party. And that, you know, they've gone down various rabbit holes. They've turned away from talking about free trade. And he also voluntarily attacked reform. Well, unprompted, sorry. And I thought that was interesting. You know, it's obviously in the wake of the local elections with reform, but that he's decided that a good line of attack is to suggest that the Tories are over. Something that actually was often said about his own party. And I think one of the really fascinating things about Keir Starmer is he often repeats attacks that were thrown at him when he was leader of the opposition, or even further back when Jeremy Corbyn was leader. He talked a lot about Badenoch carping from the sidelines, which is a line I heard a lot when Keir Starmer was in oppositions. And of course, that's all you can do when you're in opposition is carp from the sidelines. The question is, how well do you do that?
And James, I mean, we talked just before we came on the podcast about Starmer being tetchy in PMQs today, particularly in response to a question from the leader of Plaid Cymru, Liz Savile-Roberts.
Liz Savile-Roberts.
This Prime Minister once spoke of compassion and dignity for migrants and for defending free movement. Now he talks of islands of strangers and taking back control. Somebody here has to call this out, Mr. Speaker. It seems the only principle he consistently defends is whichever he last heard in a focus group. So I ask him, is there any belief he holds which survives a week in Downing Street?
Yes, the belief that she talks rubbish. Mr. Speaker.
What did you make of his performance and how he dealt with questions on immigration in his speech at the start of the week?
So I have to say, I mean, my instant response to Liz Savile-Roberts' question, I think Liz Savile-Roberts is a pretty good Commons performer, certainly plays a role in sort of being both a, you know, nationalist, but also a progressive, a bit like the SNP used to do. But I thought, I quite enjoyed his initial response, which was just that, you know, what is he saying this week? Well, it's just rubbish, you know, all of that. But I think on reflection, clearly it's something that the Conservatives are going to try and seize on. Some Conservatives have said privately that they think that the way in which the Prime Minister talks to the opposition is rather patronising. He's quite tetchy. But I think there's something interesting also in the Liz Savile-Roberts question, which is that, and we saw it a bit a couple of days ago with the immigration questions and sort of the language that's been discussed around that. You know, Keir Starmer is, more else, you know, a human rights lawyer. And, you know, someone who has always been someone who regards themselves as being on the right side of championing victims, etc. So I think he was rather shocked. And I do think there's a sense perhaps where sometimes the Tory critique will be that, you know, he thinks himself too holier than thou and that how dare you sort of question my right to do this, etc. Now, Blair did the same sort of thing and sort of obviously all leaders sort of aspire to the moral high ground. What Blair was able to do was sort of deflect it and poke some fun at himself by making jokes and setting himself up and sometimes being a bit self-deprecatory. And sometimes there's that lack of sort of fleet-footedness and elegance with Starmer in that sometimes you can just come a bit sort of pious, holier than thou, etc. So that was an interesting point. As Isabel says, you know, they're clearly trying to frame the next election between Reform and Labour. The aim is to squeeze out the Conservatives. In this analogy, sort of the Tories take the place of the old Liberal Party 100 years ago, and you have Starmer as MacDonald, Farage as Baldwin, and they're trying to basically ensure that the next contest is going to be about those two parties, and the Conservatives sort of struggle to get a hearing. I think one of the interesting thing about the theme was that privately, a lot of donors and some MPs have been urging Badenoch to make the case for the economy. Their thinking is that, look, we need to have a moderate, sensible centre-right party. Fiscal conservatism has always been the staple of the middle-class aspirant vote. Reform doesn't have a credible offer in their view on the economy. And I think you see a lot of the criticisms of the reform costings, etc., of the last couple of days. So therefore, you know, given in their view, you can't out-reform reform, given that you can't actually offer much in terms of migration, which reform wouldn't want to do it. Of course, that was one of the main failings of the last government. Why not go in the economy? Why not look at the data? Why not refashion the politics rather than a sort of arms race against Farage, which you inevitably lose? Why not talk about the economy, position yourself as being on business and being able to shed some of that baggage from the Liz Truss era?
Yeah, and Isabel, I suppose on that topic of the immigration, you know, we've talked about this in the podcast already, but we've seen today that Anna Sarwar, the Scottish Labour leader, has not condoned the words that Starmer decided to use in his speech about the island of strangers that has caused some consternation among some of his backbenchers. Do you think the issue of the language in that speech is going to continue to be a problem for Starmer going forwards, or do you think he has successfully managed to appeal to the right-leaning voters that he was aiming at in the first place?
Yeah, I think there's three parts to the answer to that question. One is, has it worked politically? And I'd argue yes, because actually one of the things about other people objecting to what you say is it amplifies what you said. And so that, you know, to a certain extent, that has been helpful because it just means the speech has had a few more days of coverage. I'd then say in a sort of parliamentary arithmetic political sense, the jury's still out on that, and it may not, I think we talked about this in the podcast yesterday, it may not be that the MPs who are unhappy about the immigration speech rebel on the legislation that comes out of this immigration white paper, but it might be that it is a serious contributory factor in Starmer's majority, his actual sort of working majority, the MPs who he can rely on to vote for his policies in general, that it's one of the major contributory factors to that majority starting to dwindle. And I mentioned on the podcast yesterday, you know, this comes on top of real disquiet about benefit cuts, whether it's disability benefit cuts or the winter fuel payment and the cuts to international aid. So I'd say that, you know, a lot of the soft left are feeling quite wearied at the moment. So I don't think you can say it's worked in that sort of political sense, but you do have to, you know, you have to work out what you want to gamble your majority on, basically what you want to expend your majority on. And he's clearly decided that actually in terms of the next election, his majority, his actual majority would be significantly reduced if he didn't end up addressing this publicly. And then finally, there's, you know, that has this actually worked in policy terms, because, and all political leaders fall into this trap of thinking because they've given a speech that everyone's talked about, they now have the policy up and running and everything's, you know, they've ticked that box and they can move on to something else on the to-do list. And we just don't know. the Conservatives have obviously been very critical of it, but they're being very critical of everything at the moment. And I think they have got themselves into a bit of a pickle about what they want to oppose and what they don't want to. And that's partly as a function of not having any policies themselves. But actually, you know, are we going to end up with a lower net migration figure, as the Prime Minister promised we would? We don't know. Are the measures on care workers, for instance, really going to hobble the care sector without actually lowering the numbers? We don't know that as well. So, you know, that's a much longer term question, but that's not answered by one speech.
Just to make the point as well, I thought it was interesting talking about the economy today. First of all, and the fleet-footedness and how Bednock was able to keep moving, dancing around it. And Starmer looked a little bit plodding and tetchy. I think the chat in the lobby after was about tetchy Rishi and a sort of return, etc. Long shadow of Rishi Sunak. But I also think it was interesting in terms of the subject matter because, you know, with reform, there's going to be this constant question of sort of out-reforming them, etc. I think I was struck by the sort of contrast between yesterday, where we had the Opposition Day debate on EU, the EU proposed EU treaty next week, and the Monday next week when we have this key EU-UK summit. And I wonder perhaps if, you know, there's going to be an active debate in terms of emphasising either what we consider Tory-coded or right-wing-coded issues, or those sort of like, you know, the welfare cuts. You know, I think, as Isabel said, you know, the idea about opposition is to make the life difficult for the government. That is not a intellectual exercise. That is a political exercise. This is the real divide, I think, within the Conservative Party. There are those who want to sort of talk about Tory issues and want to go after things that matter to them. The other thing, basically, you need to do is the basic job of holding the government to account. So I was struck that they chose, for instance, to go after the EU summit yesterday and on that Opposition Day debate, rather than, for instance, talking about welfare cuts, which my understanding is from talking to senior Labour figures, that is a real concern for them right now. Currently, there's sort of a lot of overlap in terms of the people who are the usual suspects, and then there's sort of 40 extra ones, so sort of 80 overall public, but 40 sort of known knowns, and then 40 sort of more newer ones. But I think that'd be an interesting test over the next couple of weeks, given the sensitivities on the Labour side. Will the Tories try and focus on things that they consider their traditional strengths, like sort of the Brexit issue, or will it be more about sort of trying to make life difficult for the Labour MPs?
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.